Okay, wow, that's really nice. Okay. Sorry. Do you want to put those on the shrine over there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can find, later on, you can maybe find the vase or something there. But yeah. Great. Wonderful. Oh, it's warm already. Okay. Hello, everyone. Is everyone good? You all happy? You got nice rooms and everything? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. Great. So that means we can start. Yeah? No more messing around. Now we can't really get into it. Are you reasonably comfortable in your rooms? Is it warm enough and everything? Yeah. For those of you, even the Singaporeans are getting warm. Yeah, you got lots of blankets. Okay, great. It's difficult when you come from a tropical country. Yeah, it takes time to adjust. It was funny because I was just talking to very good Singaporean friends yesterday. They were saying, "Oh, how can you walk around like this when it's so cold?" And I said, "I'm really strong. I've got Norwegian jeans." And then a few hours later, the cold comes, and I started getting a stuffy nose. Very embarrassing. That's when you pretend to be tough. Yeah, that's when things usually go wrong. That's when conceit arising. Yeah. So anyway, let's welcome again. And as usual, this is going to be a retreat, a mixture of suttas and meditation practice. And the reason for that is because I always found it very nice to be inspired by the word of the Buddha on the one hand, and then do meditation on the other hand, which then enhances your ability to understand the word of the Buddha. So it's kind of mutually reinforcing. And this is what is so nice about this. This is the theory anyway. Practice is not quite like that, of course, but that's the kind of the idea in theory. So sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't work. So don't worry too much about that. So that is the purpose of these retreats, and hopefully it is you will learn something about meditation practice, but also more generally about the Buddhist path. So it is something that you can take with you also when you go back home. Yeah, it's a kind of a broad view of the Buddhist path, not just about meditation practice itself. And the theme for the retreat this year is going to be roughly the Eightfold Path, and we're going to pull that apart a little bit. And have a look at it from different angles, different ways of understanding the Noble Eightfold Path. And of course, that is the most important way that the Buddha explains about the practice from the very beginning all the way to the very end. So very useful, and probably the most important part of the Buddha's teachings in many ways is the Noble Eightfold Path. So it's very useful to understand how that actually works out. But before I talk about that at all, I'm going to just start with an introduction to meditation practice today. I'm not going to be talking that much about meditation during the sutta readings. Of course, everything is really about meditation, so as we goes through these things, there will always be little things about meditation all the time. But tonight, I'm just going to give a general introduction. And then on the days later on, I will do a guided meditation every day just to remind you of the basic ideas. If you don't like guided meditations, you don't have to come to those. Yeah, I know some people don't like guided meditations very much. Some people really like them. I guess it depends on how independent you are in your meditation, whether you are new or not. Is there anyone here who is absolutely beginner meditation? Everybody has done a little bit? Yeah? Okay, great. So I will do those anyway, just to remind you. But it's really completely 100% up to you whether you want to be here or not. And that is true for everything. Yeah, for the talks, for the meditations, for whatever you do, everything is voluntary. And I think that is so important, so you can basically go with your natural rhythm, what feels okay with you. And I think that actually increases the enjoyment of these kind of retreats. Ajahn Ram always says there's only two things on the retreat that is compulsory, that is breakfast and lunch. Yeah, this shows you the kind of direction of these retreats. Yeah, it's about enjoying ourselves to the best of our ability, because it's when you enjoy yourself that meditation actually works. This is kind of one of the underlying ideas here. So that is, so please feel free to do whatever you like. You don't have to follow any particular things in the schedule. The only thing I would ask you to do is to be a bit sensitive to everyone else. So when you come in and out of this room, do it with a kind of fair bit of care, yeah, so you don't kind of annoy people or you don't kind of make too much noise. It's surprising on retreats like this, there's always a fair number of people who get some really nice meditation, yeah, who get in lots of bliss and lots of happiness or even nimittas and all of these things. And because of that, it's nice to kind of have that compassion for people who are doing really well, yeah, and encourage them and move them forward rather than perhaps pull them out of the meditation because being maybe a little bit insensitive or noisy or whatever. So that's the only thing I'd ask you. I'll try to be sensitive myself as well when I come in and out of this room. Is there anything else about the retreat that everybody is okay? Usually Bianca knows everything inside out. She's usually very good, so usually I don't have to say very much, which is very, very nice. 8 precepts, all clear. Yeah, everything knows about that. This teddy bear is sitting by himself. Is he one of the 60 retreatants? He's sitting there by himself. Maybe he's number 61, this teddy bear. Yeah. Very interesting. So that is just the general things. Now I will just start talking a little bit about meditation practice. And I'm just going to talk about some of the main things that I think is important to make meditation work. And a lot of these things will be elaborated in the suttas. And the first thing that I always like to bring up, because this is the first teaching of the Buddha after his awakening, when he goes out and teaches the 5 ascetics, that is where the very first thing he talks about is the middle way. Yeah, and the middle way is all about meditation practice, really. It's actually about the whole Noble Eightfold Path, but it really comes together very nicely in meditation practice. And that middle way can actually be expressed in different ways. The Buddha often talks about the middle. Dependent origination is one way of thinking about the middle, for example. But the middle way in terms of meditation practice is the idea of not indulging, yeah, sensuality. That's why we have the 8 precepts on retreats like this. So on the one hand, not indulging, and on the other hand, not tormenting ourselves. That's what the middle way is. And you may think that is very basic. Yeah, you may think this, everybody knows that. Why does he talk about this? But actually, even though it is very basic and even though it is so important for the meditation to work out, it is very common in the Buddhist world for people to forget this. And it's not so much that they indulge too much. It's actually very rare to find people indulging too much. So I would recommend you to forget about the indulgence side, yeah, because you're already keeping the 8 precepts. That's already a lot of restraint from what probably most of you, or many of you anyway, are used to. I know some of you keep 8 precepts all the time, but that's kind of the super-duper and kind of fairly rare to find that. But still, this is already a lot of restraint for many of you. So don't worry too much about the indulgence side. If you need an extra cup of tea, if you need to kind of go for a walk, if you need to do something just to relax or just to do something different because you're getting a bit frustrated or whatever it is, please do so. That side is not really what you have to worry about. I'm very rare that I find Buddhist people who are meditators who get into too much indulgence. The other side is where people go wrong. They go wrong when they actually start to torment themselves in the practice. And this is so common in the Buddhist world. It's very common. You have these retreats where you have to sit for so and so long. And if you tell the teacher, it's so painful. And then sometimes they will just say, okay, sit there, watch those feelings. And to me, that is actually not the right way of teaching meditation. Because basically, it is not based on the suttas. It's not based on what the Buddha taught. In fact, the exact opposite. The middle way is precisely not torturing the body. In practice, what does this mean? In practice, what it means is that if you feel during this retreat, you are sitting for long periods, you're feeling you have pains in the body or whatever, don't just sit there. Do something else. Move your legs a little bit. Take a different position. Lean against the wall. Yeah, whatever it takes. Sit on a chair. Go for a walk. Whatever it is, so you don't actually torment yourself too much. This is so fundamental. And I can almost guarantee you that if you torment yourself too much, you're not going to get anywhere in your meditation practice. Find that middle way where the body starts to disappear. And this is really the critical thing here about the middle way, is that if you indulge the body too much, it means that you are getting pleasure through the body. And if you get pleasure through the body is important. Yeah? And if the body is important, the mind goes to those senses. It goes to the eyes, it goes to the ears, whatever it is. But if you are torturing the body, it's exactly the same thing. Yeah? If you torture yourself, then the mind is interested in the body because it wants to get rid of the pain. So the mind goes out to the body and tries to kind of resolve that situation. It's very hard to withdraw the mind from the body if you have a lot of pain. Yeah, you can investigate it, so they say, but I have never really felt that people get all that much insight from investigating the pain of the body. There is nothing in the suttas that actually says that we have to do that. So find that middle way. And that middle way is the way where the body disappears. There's no interest in the body anymore because there's no happiness to be had there. There's no suffering to be had there. And when the body, for that reason, becomes irrelevant, then the mind can withdraw from the body. So this is what the middle way is all about. So remember that, and this is such an important, such a basic thing, and yet so important to actually keep this in mind. In my experience, it is very deeply rooted in the human psyche that we think pain will give results in the spiritual practice. The Buddha himself, yeah, the Buddha to be, I will show you this in the suttas later on, he also thought that. And so it's a very, has a very kind of, you know, even the number one spiritual master of the kind of known history. That's the Buddha is for me. He's the number one spiritual master in known history. At the very top, even he made that mistake. So if he made that mistake, chances are other people are going to do it, make it too. So find that middle way. And what happens when you find the middle way is that when the body disappears, the mind comes into prominence. Yeah, and the Buddha talks about the middle way, which is also the Noble Eightfold Path. Of course, the purpose of this Noble Eightfold Path is at the very end, you have the jhanas, the samadhi, the deep states of meditation practice. And these are states of tremendous bliss and happiness and joy and tranquility and all of these kind of things. And you will not be able to go there, to that middle way, if you have too much problems in the physical body. Yeah, too much pain is not actually going to drive you or get you going in the right direction. And one of the powerful things when you start to read the suttas, the discourses of the Buddha, is you start to see the extent to which the Buddha talks about joy and happiness on the path of meditation. One of my favorite suttas, which I read out on every retreat, but not on this one, but usually, so I maybe if I have extra time, I will squeeze it in there, but probably would be hard. We already had too many pages already, probably. Probably need to take more out rather than putting more in. But I'll tell you now, so you don't actually miss out. Favorite sutta, for those of you who haven't been to my meditation retreats before, is this called Dependent Liberation. How the liberation of the mind happens through a causal sequence. That's why it's called Dependent Liberation. Yeah, and that sequence of Dependent Liberation, it starts off with sila. Sila is your character, your virtue, your person, your habits, yeah, who you are as a person. It starts off with sila, with being a good person, basically, having a good heart, you can say. And if you have a really, really good heart, and this is one of those things, you want to develop that good-heartedness as much as we possibly can, then you have no regret. Because you have no regret, you feel gladness, pamuja. Yeah, gladness already coming right there. If you keep your sila really, really well, there will be a natural sense of gladness in your mind. Then from the gladness comes the piti. Piti is like joy, yeah, often powerful joy that can be felt almost physically. Many of you will know what that is already because you've been there before. Then as that joy becomes even deeper, it calms down, we get tranquility. From the tranquility comes the sukha. The sukha is the deep happiness that happens when the mind starts to become very still. Yeah? And from that deep happiness comes the samadhi, the ability to stay unified with the object, the jhanas and all of this. And what you will notice about this thing I just talked about now, yeah, it's all about happiness. Yeah, joy is about gladness first of all, then joy, then tranquility, then even more profound happiness, and then samadhi. Every stage of that thing is about happiness. Deeper, more and more profound, more and more still happiness as you move on. So the Buddha's teaching of meditation, and I think this is so attractive. Yeah, it's so kind of, it draws you in when you see this. You think, wow, this is what this is all about. Yeah, I mean, if you only hear about the Four Noble Truths, you think suffering and the cause of suffering, yeah, not interested in Buddhism. But when you read this, you think, yeah, this is actually what I'm after. And it is so incredibly attractive. But the only way you're going to get started on that path with all of those various degrees of happiness, the only way it's going to work out for you is if you get it right from the beginning and you start enjoying your meditation from the very start and you don't block your progress by feeling too much pain and problems in the body. So this goes together, the idea of finding some degree of happiness while you are here for the next 9 days. Please try to enjoy the next 9 days. Try to find this middle way where you feel a sense of inspiration, you feel a sense of peace. It's not going to be smooth. It's always going to be a bit up and down, of course. But generally speaking, you feel that sense of ease and gladness and happiness while you're here. If you can do that, then you're going to have a long life as a meditator and a Buddhist ahead of you. You're not going to convert to some other dodgy religion, but you're going to... I apologize. Don't record that. Oh, it's too late. It's already recorded. Okay. Oh, well. What can you do? So and this is, of course, the whole point about the Buddhist teaching, is that it's only when you persevere and you commit to this path that the real results come. And the way to persevere and commit is to enjoy what you're doing here. Yeah, so it's so important. So these are the two first principles of meditation, the middle way. Enjoy the practice. Enjoy while you're here. If you're not enjoying it anymore, you feel frustrated and whatever, then take a break, go for a walk in the forest, have a look at the kangaroos, hopefully the blue sky. We can't predict that, unfortunately. And just enjoy. It's very beautiful around here. The bush is very nice, especially for those of you who come from overseas. You don't get much of this kind of bush in Singapore, for example. You can enjoy the bush while you're here. In Singapore, it's more like concrete jungle, isn't it? So enjoy what is here. And as you do that, you find that harmony. And then you come back and sit. And when you don't want to sit anymore, you do something else. And back and forth like that. What happens as you do this, one of the other factors of this dependent liberation sequence is a factor which basically is about simplicity in the meditation practice. One of the things that we tend to complicate things too much in our meditation, some of the meditations we hear about are really, really complicated, but the Buddha's type of meditation actually is very, very simple. It's about calming down. It's about becoming peaceful. It's about watching the breath. Yeah, very natural and very simple things. One leading to the next one, very naturally and very easily. And one of the surprising things that the Buddha says about meditation practice in this particular sutta on dependent liberation, he says that this cannot be done through an act of will. Yeah, chaitana is the word he uses. The word chaitana in Pali, often translated as intention, it means will as well. The meditation, the going through the various stages, getting all the happiness and joy and tranquility, cannot be done through willpower. That's what he says. His implication is that willpower just gets in the way. Yeah, it's a problem. I remember when I came to Bodhinyana Monastery, Ajahn Brahm would always go on about, don't do anything, just sit there, yeah, don't do anything. And I always thought, yeah, he's just exaggerating, yeah. I was kind of, after having been around Ajahn Brahm for 20 years, I know more about him than most, yeah. So if anyone has any secrets about Ajahn Brahm, it's going to be someone like me. So one of the secrets about Ajahn Brahm, yeah, is that many of you will probably know this already, but the stories he tells, have you noticed how they change a little bit every year? And every time they get a little bit more kind of exaggerated, a little bit more kind of over the top. I'm not sure if it's a secret, actually, probably a very open secret. This is one of the things I noticed about him. He always kind of, you know, the stories get kind of more and more elaborate and more kind of over the top. And so I asked Ajahn about this once, you know, what's this with these stories of yours? What's actually true and what is made up in these stories? And his answer, it doesn't matter what's true or made up. What matters is the impact of the story here. Yeah, that the story actually works, that it makes a particular point. And I think after a while, he doesn't even know himself what is true and what isn't. Yeah, so that's kind of, it kind of just evolves naturally. Yeah. So I used to think the same thing is true when he teaches meditation. Yeah, just sit there, don't do anything. Yeah. And of course, when you start out, it's almost impossible to do that. Sit there and don't do anything. You have no idea what he's talking about. But this is one of the beautiful things. You start to read the word of the Buddha. You hear that your teachers, you know, people like Ajahn Brahm, whoever else you take as your teacher, and you see the match. Yeah, how it actually goes so beautifully together. It is basically exactly the same teaching. And I thought, wow, you know, it's good to question a little bit. So I thought, but it's so reassuring when you see that what the Buddha teaches and what you get from your kind of living teachers, when that matches, wow, it is very powerful and very beautiful. And I don't know, I don't think Ajahn Brahm got his teachings from this sutta. This is just his experience. Because Ajahn Brahm is very, very skilled in samadhi practice. He knows exactly what he's talking about. So when you take the will and the intention out of meditation, all you do is sit there, don't do anything at all. It is very simple. Yeah, it is actually, it's too simple for most people. They can't help themselves but to kind of get involved. But actually, it's incredible. Once you get the hang of that, so, so simple. You just sit back. You just relax. You just enjoy what is here. You just kind of bring up the right attitude. It's a few little simple tricks that you use. Change your perception a little bit. And as you do that, the process happens automatically. And this is the point of meditation practice. It is an automatic process once you kind of get started and you do things in the right way. Isn't that quite cool? Isn't that quite nice? This idea of automatic process. Sit back, relax, enjoy. And bang, it all happens. When you get it right, yeah? When you get it right, it all happens. This is what Ajahn Brahm says. You know, you just sit back, yeah? You wait, yeah? And as you wait back, the nimittas come, and bang, you go into deep samadhi here. That's what he says. And we hopefully can try to guide our minds in the same direction. So it's a very simple practice. You just have to get those stages right. And in that simplicity, in that idea of withdrawing the willpower from things, that is where mindfulness happens. Mindfulness is the prerequisite for meditation to work. Yeah? When you have mindfulness, it means that the mind doesn't really go into the past, it doesn't go into the future. The idea of mindfulness is staying in the present moment with a degree of clarity. That is what mindfulness is all about. And when you simplify a lot, when you don't use your willpower and intention at all, then when you are withdrawing the will, you're also withdrawing the mind's interest and ability to go into the future and the past. Yeah, withdrawing the will, just being present, means that you are not drawing energy from the mind. You're not allowing, the mind can't go anywhere because the mind needs that intention and will to go into the future and past. So by withdrawing that, mindfulness starts to happen all by itself. Yeah, and that is where mindfulness comes up. The future and past disappears, and then the mindfulness comes as a consequence. And there's a beautiful sutta about that. Many of the suttas will illustrate the points that I've been talking about today. And this is the sutta called the Bhaddhekaratta Sutta, One Auspicious Night, or One Auspicious Day. The idea of one auspicious day of meditation practice. And it has a very beautiful verse that we'll talk about later on, about not going into the future and the past, but seeing clearly in the present moment. And that is what this is about. When you simplify like this, mindfulness tends to arise as a consequence. All you do is be aware. All you do is be in the present moment. Don't do anything. Allow things to calm down. Gradually, gradually, the mindfulness comes back to you. Yeah, the more you do, the more agency you have, the more you are withdrawing or drawing on the energy of the mind. And when you draw on the energy of the mind all the time, there's no energy there to be mindful and to be aware. So by taking away the doing, by calming things down, by withdrawing the willpower, yeah, withdrawing the willpower is like being content in the present moment. Wow, it's so wonderful to be here. What a wonderful thing it is to be here at Jhana Grove. What a marvelous thing is that Western Australia has maybe the best meditation center in the entire world. Yeah, wow, how fortunate. You come here and you just enjoy the place in this way. And then that contentment arises, the mindfulness comes, and things just build up from that as you do that. But to be able to really do this, for this to be able to work out properly, there's a few tricks, a few types of perceptions that are very useful to bring with you through the meditation practice. You will find that mindfulness, if it doesn't arise, there is usually some very good reasons for that. One of the important things to make mindfulness arise is to make sure you have the right attitude in your meditation practice. Ajahn Brahm always talks about make peace, what does it say, make peace, be gentle, be kind, or something like that. I'm not sure what he says these days, he changes a little bit, but something like that. This is all about right attitude. So you come into the meditation with the right attitude, with a sense of positivity, with a sense of gratitude, with a sense of compassion, with a sense of friendliness and loving kindness to your fellow meditators. Don't forget that. Don't forget on this retreat to have a sense of metta, loving kindness to your fellow people who are here. It is wonderful to be able to be in the company of so many good people. Yeah. How many people in the world are willing to give up 9 days of their life to have 1.5 meals a day, not have any entertainment, and kind of really live an austere life, yeah, by worldly standards? Let's face it. How many people are willing to do that? Only people who are really serious about the spiritual path. So the people who are here are absolutely top-notch. And even if they do little things that irritate you, that are a bit noisy or whatever, because you remember that the people here are such wonderful people, basically. When you remember that all the time, you have that sense of metta there, of friendliness. You can let go of the small irritations so easily. This is actually a very useful hint, because it's so easy to, when we live so close together, to be irritated even by the best of people. So remember the big picture. Remember the fact that you are here with people who are very special and very dedicated to the Buddhist path. And what a wonderful thing it is to have such kalyanamittas and friends in the spiritual life. And when you have that kind of attitude, you will find your meditation, wow, it's going to go so much better, because you feel positive inside of you. You have gratitude, compassion, understanding, generosity in your heart. You bring up the memory of these things from the past. Yeah, you remember times in the past when you have been very kind to somebody and you felt very happy as a consequence. You remember things in the past when you were very generous. You even had just a kind thought to someone. And you remember that and you feel, whoa, you feel so happy about that. This is a special teaching of the Buddha called Chaganusati and Sinanusati, the recollection of your good qualities. This actually gives rise to these wholesome states of mind, the right attitude. Yeah, and you can see here already now, I'm not going to go too much into this now, but you can see already now how the rest of the Buddhist path is so important to support your meditation practice. If attitude is so important, if the right outlook, the way we think about our other people is important, then of course, how we live our ordinary life outside of the retreats becomes so important as well. Because if we live with kindness our general life, the more we're able to do that, the more we bring that attitude with us when we go on the meditation retreat. And it makes the meditation so much easier. You can see here the connection between your ordinary life and your success in meditation as you come here or wherever else you go. So remember the idea of attitude, yeah? If you feel really grumpy, then go for a walk instead of coming here and kind of fuming, yeah? Fume outside, first of all. And it's very easy, it's very hard sometimes not to fume. Sometimes we get grumpy about things. It's just the nature of the mind. The mind goes like this. So then kind of go and chill a little bit, yeah? And have a cup of tea and read a nice sutta or do whatever. And then when you feel right again, then come back in here and you've got the kind of positive vibe again inside of you. Don't try too hard to meditate if the mind isn't in the right state, because very often it just leads to frustration and it can be a hard thing to do. One of the interesting things the Buddha says in the simile of the saw, which is the sutta on metta, basically, he says that if you have a problem with a person, if there's someone you feel a bit of ill will or negativity towards, you start with that person, you neutralize that problem first of all, and then you go on to metta. Yeah, so this is, again, the idea of having the right attitude first. Then that enables you to then have for the meditation to work out. So this is a very important part of the practice, the attitude. This really enables and encourages your meditation practice. The very last point I want to talk about very briefly is about outlook on life, because this is also very, very powerful for one's meditation practice. And you can understand that if you know the Noble Eightfold Path starts off with right view. Yeah, right view being basically our outlook, how we look at the world. And of course, the person who really has right view is the stream enterer. Yeah, because they have seen reality for what it actually is. And for the stream enterer, to enter samadhi is quite easy. Once they withdraw from the world a little bit, they get a bit of time for themselves, they can always go back into samadhi because they know where real happiness is to be found and they know where suffering is to be found. Why? Because they have seen it for themselves. This is the point of insight, really. So the more we can align our outlook with the outlook of the stream enterer, with the outlook of the Buddha, the more we will be able to also the more our meditation will be empowered as a consequence. So the idea of right view or right outlook is very important. Yeah, so where do we find that right outlook? Basically, it's the suttas, yeah, the word of the Buddha, basically all of that is the kind of the right outlook. Once you get a kind of a handle on that, you know how to look at the world. So you have a basic idea of where true and real happiness is to be found. You know that when you if you're going to find real contentment and happiness and a sense of finality and completion in life, it is found in meditation practice and not in worldly things. You know that the worldly things are going on and on and on is not really ever going to get you there because you've done it so long already and you know it doesn't lead to any lasting satisfaction. It is a spiritual path that leads to that satisfaction. It is a spiritual path that leads to finding the true meaning of life. Yeah, so once you see that, the more you see that, the more ability you have in seeing the world in that way, the greater will be your ability to sit down. You can let go of the world straight away because you know that that world basically can never give you what you're looking for. The deep down satisfaction and contentment that we're all searching for cannot be found there, but it can be found in meditation practice. And one of the ways that I would encourage you to think about this is to think about this as, you know, sometimes people say, I do meditation practice to improve my ordinary life. Yeah, so I kind of come to meditate so then I can become more efficient as a banker or a lawyer or whatever afterwards. Yeah, I can become a better mother or father when I meditate. Yeah, this is how people sometimes think about meditation practice, as an enhancement of the ordinary life. But what that means is that you're putting the ordinary life on top, yeah, your ordinary kind of worldly life on top, and meditation, spiritual life, is like a support for your ordinary life. And if that is your priority, worldly life is first, spiritual life is second, then when you sit down to do your meditation practice, guess what happens? You're going to think about your ordinary life, yeah, because that is your priority. You're going to go back to those things. You're going to think about your job, about your family, about all the pleasures you're missing out on by being a Jhana Grove, whatever it is. Your mind will incline there because your priorities are in the wrong order. But if you think about your ordinary, the rest of your life, yeah, as a support for your spiritual life, yeah, if everything you do in your life, everything you do in your work, in your family, in your relations, whatever, is a support for your spiritual life, then the spiritual life is on top. Everything else is underneath. And what that means when you sit down, yeah, you have no more business with the ordinary life. Why? Because its only purpose was to get you here to Jhana Grove, to sit down on the cushion or chair or whatever, and then do your meditation practice. That was the purpose of it. It has served its purpose. Now there is no more business to be done there. So your interest in those things, because they have no priority anymore, your interest in the worldly things will start to become far less. And it enables you to focus much better on your meditation practice while you are here. So get the outlook right. Get your priorities right. I should maybe say, just for to be very clear about this, this does not mean that you become callous and don't care about your family. In fact, it means the exact opposite, yeah? Because if you integrate your spiritual practice into your ordinary life, it actually tends to enhance your family life, your work life, and all of these other things. So it doesn't mean that at all. In fact, it tends to mean the exact opposite. So it benefits both. But still, you have your priorities right. You know the order of things. And as you do that, hopefully that will enable you to deepen your meditation practice. So, that is just a few pointers for you about meditation, etc. It is a very simple thing. Don't try to complicate it too much. And as you simplify it, and as you kind of make it very easy, you allow mindfulness to arise and all of these things, it will hopefully, you will get some happiness and joy out of this retreat. And then that is really all that matters. If you have any questions about meditation or whatever as we go along, please put those in the box. Is there a box out there already? There should be a box usually on the table outside. Yeah. So, and then you can write down the question or whatever. Or you can come to the interview sessions and you can talk about your meditation with me. And then we can sort out anything else. So let me stop there because that's about half an hour. And let's just start off just doing a little bit of meditation together just to get started on this retreat here. Okay, everyone, so just start off the retreat very gently. It often takes a day or two before you really settle down. So give yourself that time and allow things to settle down very gradually. You cannot force this process. It's going to happen according to nature. So please don't be impatient. Patience is always the best way in meditation. So as always, just start off just by feeling yourself, feeling comfortable in the body, feeling at ease and relaxed, and allowing that ease to build up. And as the ease builds up, gradually mindfulness will return and come back to you. And you can probably expect your mind to be a bit unstable at the beginning, for there to be some thinking or tiredness or whatever. This is natural at the beginning of a retreat. So again, don't try to control that, just allow it to be. It will take a while, but eventually it will settle down all by itself. The fastest way in meditation is always patience. So if you're able to be patient with things, allow things to be, then you will be heading in the right direction. And as you patiently just allow everything to be, you can gradually tune in to the beautiful atmosphere that you find here. Atmosphere of peace, an atmosphere of goodwill, an atmosphere which is just right for meditation practice. Try to tune into that, feel that. And as you feel that, it builds up inside of you. Don't force it, but try just to allow it to happen naturally. The world that you have left behind dies down, and in its place you get this beautiful perception of what the spiritual path is all about. Okay, everyone, so that's the meditation for now. I'm going to retire now. please have a nice night and keep on meditating if you like. Do whatever you prefer. And then we'll see you back again tomorrow morning. Okay.